Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the genealogy of the Jews when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something's wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they teach the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, that's a pretty radical change in our political and our moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in our public schools without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, entertaining, and free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. The genealogy of the Jews. It descends from a fellow by the name of Abraham. If we go back and take a look at Abraham's genealogy for four generations, we find that Abraham had a wife named Sarah. Sarah and Abraham had one son by the name of Isaac. Isaac married a woman named Rebekah. Isaac and Rebekah had two sons. One of the sons, named Jacob, had four wives, 12 sons, and one daughter. If you take a look at the 12 sons and their children, we find that there's a total of 51. So in four generations, we go from Abraham to 51 sons. And one of those sons occupies the space of Judah or the Jews. Isn't that amazing? Now, today, when you talk to somebody and he mentions the word Jew, we immediately think, oh, yeah, I know, Jews, the people who live over in Palestine, in that little country called Israel. Or, when people think of Jews, they think of, oh yeah, the people in the Bible, the biblical people. They also think of Jew as being synonymous with Israel. Those are the Israelites. All three of those propositions are incorrect. Now, there's an interesting statement made in the Scripture, made in the Bible. There's actually two of them. They're both in Revelation, and one is in Revelation 2, verse 9, and the other in Revelation 3, verse 9. Listen to this. It's kind of bizarre. In Revelation 2, 9, it says, "I know your works in tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan." I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not. Somewhere in the world today, there are some people that call themselves Jews, and they're not Jews. And we know that because the Bible tells us that. Hey, there's some deception going on here. Let's see if we can uncover it. In verse 9 in the next chapter, this is Revelation 3, verse 9, he says, "Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before your feet, and to know that I have loved you." Notice in this scripture here, he says, "which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie." Now, in order to lie, which, as I mentioned here just a program or two back, deals with fraud. Now, when we deal with fraud, it comes in two forms. It's an actual fraud or a constructive fraud. If you lie and you know that what you're saying is a lie, we call that an actual fraud. If you lie but you really believe it, in other words, I'm telling you a story, but I really believe the story I'm telling you, it's just as false, but it's a constructive fraud. A little difference in the uptake, in the penalty. We charge people that practice actual fraud with perjury, and people that practice constructive fraud, we don't charge with perjury. And that's because they made a mistake. What they're telling us isn't true, but it isn't because they know better. But in verse 10 here, these people seem to know better, or at least some of them do. Some of those that are evidently writing the books, or should know, as we say in law, knew or should have known, know that it's really an actual fraud. Now, let's go back with a little history here, and let's take a look and see, who are these people that call themselves Jews today and are not? Well, in 1948, an Arab ambassador to the United Nations challenged the Jewish ambassador who was making a speech and talking about Palestine in 1948 and how he was a Jew and how the Jews had a claim and a right to that piece of real estate. And this Arab ambassador is from Saudi Arabia. He said, "I am descended from Abraham. Let's see your genealogy, and let's see how you are connected or descended from Abraham." And you know, the Jewish ambassador shut up, and he declined the challenge. Now that tells you a little something, because Jacob is descended from Abraham, and he is the progenitor of the Jews. Let me show you the genealogy here. Jacob had a wife named Leah who had four sons, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Rachel, Leah's sister, had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin, making a total of six. Leah had a handmaid, and that handmaid and Rachel's handmaid, they were named Bilhah and Zilpah. They had two children. That's Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. Now, Leah had three children, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. If we look at the chronological order, and she had a total of seven children. She had four, and then she had two, that's six boys and one daughter. Now that's a total of 12 boys and one girl. The fourth one, named Judah, had five children. If we were to draw a box for each one of these offspring, we would have 51 boxes, for which the Jews descended from Judah would occupy one box, from a son named Shelah. Now you may be sitting there saying, well, I'm not sure I can keep up with this, but I'll make it a little bit simpler for you. If we look at Abraham, had a boy named Isaac, who had a boy named Jacob, who had a boy named Judah, we're concerned now with Judah and his descendants, because you can't have a Jew before you have a Judah. Abraham was not a Jew, Isaac wasn't a Jew, and Jacob wasn't a Jew. Judah was a Jew, he was the world's first Jew, and he had five sons. So he had five Jewish sons, just like George Gordon has five children named Gordon. So my firstborn, Ted Gordon, then I got another one named George Gordon, and I got a third one named Robert Gordon. They're all Gordons. Judah, who had five sons, the first one was named Ur, so that's Ur Judah. He had an Onan Judah, he had a Shelah Judah, and then he had two more named Perez and Zerah. Well, here's the story on Judah's five children. The firstborn, and you'll see this in Genesis chapter 38. Go to Genesis chapter 38 and tells you the story of Judah. Judah married a woman by the name of Shua, and she was a black woman. Judah was a white Semite who married a black woman, and they had three sons. When a white man marries a black woman and they have children, the offspring are called mulattoes today. Now, in ancient times, in Hebrew, they would be called bastards. Even though the marriage was up front, but the word bastard in Hebrew means not illegitimate, but mongrel. It means crossbreed, crossbred, interracial marriage. Well, who was a mulatto, died. And we don't know how he died, but we know who killed him. And God himself says that he killed Now, had married a white Hebrew princess. So here's a mulatto who marries a white girl. And there's an important reason why this marriage took place, because Judah, who was a son of Jacob, a son of Isaac, and a son of Abraham, had a promise given to him by God that he would inherit the scepter. So the inheritance which Jacob stole from his brother Esau included two things. One was the birthright, and the second was the scepter, or the power to reign over the family. Remember, Abraham was a king, and he was a father of many nations, and a monarchy, and a number of monarchies came out of Abraham. In fact, many nations came out of Abraham. So for part of our story here, Abraham had, he had a boy by the name of Ishmael. Ishmael had 12 sons, and those people today are called Arabs. So if you look in the world today, you'll find 12 tribes that are descended from Ishmael, and those are the Arabians. Arabs. They don't all live in Saudi Arabia, but they're all Arabs. They live in Egypt, Libya, Iraq, Jordan, Palestine, Saudi Arabia. Now, Jacob had 12 sons. and they're called Israelites. You got Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, Joseph, and Benjamin. Only one of those 12 is Judah, and the Jews are descended from Judah. Now, all 12 of these boys are Israelites, but only one can claim to be a Jew. So, when we see in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 that there's somebody that claims to be Jews and are not, there's one more factor that comes in. They also claim to be Israelites, and they're not. Now, isn't that just real special? I'll show you that as we progress along. Now, when Ur died, he had a wife by the name of Tamar, and they had no children. And this triggered a statute called the Duty of the Husband's Brother. It's an obscure statute. It's in Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10. And what happens when that statute is triggered? The next son in line has to take that widow to wife. Could be a second, third, or fourth wife. And raise up children to her so that she and her offspring can inherit. Well, Onan was the second born, and it was his duty to raise up seed under the duty of the husband's brother statute, and he refused to do that. He just flat said, I ain't going to do it. And you'll read the story there in Genesis 38, so God killed him. He just up and killed him. Now, that's kind of peculiar. It's pretty important here because remember that Jesus the Messiah is going to be born from that branch of the family that holds the scepter. Because remember, Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So he has to be from the royal side of the family. He has to be born from Judah because in Genesis 49, verse 10, Judah got the scepter promise. So Judah has the scepter. He goes out and marries a black woman, an interracial marriage, the kind of marriage that everybody today would look at and say, well, what's wrong with that? Then he has three sons, Ur, Onan, and Shelah. God kills Ur, then he kills Onan, and now there's Shelah left. So Judah tells his daughter-in-law, Tamar, he says, now you go to your father's house and put on your widow's garments. Don't you marry anybody else. And when my son, Shelah, who's now 9 years old, grows up, I will give him to you for your husband. So Tamar goes back. She puts on her widow's garments. She waits for 20 years or so. This kid grows up. He goes out and marries and does his thing in life. And Tamar is about to be aced out of the inheritance. Now, the bare minimum inheritance here totals about $50 million, but it's even more important than the money, because Judah's got the scepter. Tamar, who married into the family, she's a princess, she belongs here, she's about to be aced out of the inheritance. So Tamar, crafty lady that she is, puts on some clothes, goes down, pretends that she's a whore. Judah is out shearing sheep, and he's looking for a little action on Friday night, so he sees Tamar down here along the road. He doesn't recognize that this is his daughter-in-law. You know, some years have gone by, and this woman's probably put on a little weight. She probably looks a little different, and the little head's ruling over the big head, and he doesn't pay attention, and so the next part of the story is that he goes in, has sex with her, and gets her pregnant. Now, in the process of this, Tamar is pretty crafty, and she takes Judah's bracelet, signet ring, and staff. Then she disappears, Jude is pretty concerned about this. Well, you'd be pretty concerned, too, you know, if some lot lizard walked off with your Bank AmeriCard, Discover, and Visa, you know, after a little fun and frolic in the cab. You'd be real concerned about, hey, where was that woman? Who was she and where is she? She got away with my credit cards. Those are pretty important to Judah. He couldn't find her. Some months go by, and his daughter-in-law Tamar turns up pregnant. And Judah, you know, a religious pillar in the society, sees that his daughter's pregnant, unmarried, says she's been playing the harlot in her father's house, and needs to be killed. She comes into the trial, and she says, "You're right. You're right, and I don't deny it. I'm pregnant." And, she said, "The guy that got me pregnant, here's his staff, his signet ring, and his bracelet." Now, the law requires that if you get a woman pregnant and she's been playing the harlot in her father's house, we take the woman out and stone her to death, but the law requires that we stone the man with her. Now, Judah, faced with being stoned with his daughter-in-law Tamar for having played the harlot, decided that what we need is grace over law. And so he said, "I think I'll forgive you. That way I don't have to kill myself." There was an event like this in the New Testament where a woman who was playing around a little bit, a little loose, was taken in the very act of adultery, and so the Pharisees brought him over. These Pharisees, you know, those are the religious people. They're the Baptists and the religious guys, you know, Catholics, Protestants. And they came to Jesus, and they said, "Look, we found this woman. She was taken in the very act of adultery. What do you think we ought to do with her?" They were kind of testing his legal acumen. And so he didn't say anything. He just stooped over, and he wrote something in the dust. Scholars have been musing over what he wrote in the dust, which goes to show you that scholars don't read the Bible. They study it hard and heavy, but they don't pay much attention. I can tell you what he wrote in the dust. He wrote in the dust, "Where is the man?" Because the law requires that if you're going to stone the woman, you got to have the man with her. And they took her in the very act of adultery. Isn't that what they said? Out of their own mouths, then they condemned themselves, didn't they? So then, when they all skulked away, he looked at her and said, "Well, lady, where are your accusers?" And she said, "Well, they all slipped away." And he said, "All right, well, go and sin no more. There isn't anything you can do to her. You don't have the man. Can't kill her by herself." And so he said, "Lady, you better clean up your act over here. You might get taken another time, and they'll catch the man with him, bring them both over, and they'll stone both of you." All right, so there's that part of the story. Now, remember this boy, Sheila? Well, he's still alive, and he's got children, and then he goes on through life. Where are his children today? Now, what happened to Tamar in the two, well, in this case, the baby that she's got, and what happened to those people up until today? Where are they? Well, the Bible tells us where they're at. She had twins, and a strange event transpired. The midwife who was attending to her at the birth, she figured that there was twins coming out here. And so, since the firstborn twin is going to be the heir to the scepter, he's going to be the prince. He's going to be the prince that's going to become the king. The guy who's going to take over Judah's role as the prince of Judah. And so, the first hand that comes out, the midwife takes a red thread and ties it around his hand. Now, his hand goes back in, and the other one is born first. And then the midwife says, "This breach be upon you." Now, where are the people today who are the descendants of this baby who put his hand out first? Isn't that strange? All right. You'll find it in a book called Symbols of Our Celto or Kelto Saxon Race. It should be, I think, pronounced Celto, C-E-L-T-O, Saxon Race, by W.H. Bennett. On page 112, we read, "As descendants of Judah, their emblem was a lion. Even though bitterly resentful towards the rest of the tribe of Judah, it's very unlikely that they would give up this emblem of their identity and their descent. So we may reasonably conclude that they kept the lion as their emblem. Nevertheless, they would have to change it, in it some way to show that though they were descendants of Judah, they were entirely separate and distinct from the tribe of Judah in Israel. In their bitterness, they would want to make this difference as great as possible, and so instead of a tawny, couchant lion, they depicted theirs as both rampant and red. Thus, a rampant red lion became an emblem of the Zerah branch of the tribe of Judah." Turning again to the birth of Judah's twin sons, as recorded above, we see that peculiar circumstances of this birth gave the descendants of Zerah another emblem. "And it came to pass that when she travailed, that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, This came out first." So here we have an emblem which is absolutely unique, one which could apply to no one else, and one to which the record draws special and emphatic attention. It is the emblem on a shield with a hand red from the blood of birth, circled by a scarlet thread or cord, and in this unique way, a red hand or a red hand circled by a scarlet thread also became an emblem of the Zerah branch of the tribe of Judah. And as we have already noted, the descendants of Zerah Judah, or most of them, decided to leave Israel, the nation, and to flee out of Egypt to some new land where they could establish independent kingdoms of their own. Evidently, they could not agree on where to go, with the result that they divided into two or more groups, which then fled across the Mediterranean Sea in different directions. Now, one of these, led by Zerah's great-grandson Chalcol, fled westward to a land known today as Spain. Here they settled for a few years, and during which they founded a city which still bears their name, the name of their ancestor Zerah. It's called Zaragoza, Spain. And here we should remember that racially these descendants of Zerah were Hebrews, being descended through Abraham from Eber, or as it is in the New Testament, Heber, H-E-B-E-R. So wherever they went, they left this name like a footprint marking their journey. Thus, the river on the banks of which they founded the city of Zaragoza is still called the Ebro. And to the land itself, they gave the name Iberia, the land of the Iberi, or the Hebrews. Later, Chalcol and at least some of the others left Iberia, moving on northward to the land we call Ireland. Again, they took their name with them, calling their new home Hiberland or Hibernia, and the islands to the north of it the Hebrides Islands. Then, with Chalcol as their king, these descendants of Zerah Judah founded the kingdom of Ulster shortly after the year 1600 B.C., and from that time until the present, a matter of nearly 3,600 years, the emblem of Ulster has been a red hand circled with a scarlet cord. Isn't that just special? All right, now that tells you where the Zerah line went. Now, Jesus is descended from Judah. And if you want to check that out, we have the genealogies of Jesus in Matthew 1 and Luke 3. All right, that's Matthew 1 and Luke chapter 3. And you can chase Jesus' genealogy from both his mother and his father. That's Joseph and Mary. clear back to Adam and Eve. And you'll note that Jesus is descended from Judah through Phares, the other brother from Tamar. Now, this is pretty important because remember the little boy, Shelah? The third one, the third mulatto boy? Well, he's mentioned in Scripture in John. This is the Gospel of John 8, verse 41. I'll flip over there just quickly. John 8, verse 41. Jesus was having a conversation. And he was talking to the Pharisees. Pharisees being the religious leaders of their day, the Billy Grahams, Oral Roberts, and Jerry Falwells of the time, the Jim Bakers, and so on. And he was having a conversation with them, and they were pretty vehement. They didn't care much for him. They didn't like him. Now, you'd think that these people, all being Jews, you know, would be, they're all descended from Judah, aren't they? Now, you'd think that these guys would get along pretty well, but they didn't. And then there's a reason for it, and we see it right here in verse 41. Jesus said to them, he said, "You do the deeds of your father." And then they retorted to him and said, "We be not born of fornication." Just six words. We be not born of fornication. We have one Father, even God. Well, wait a minute. And they just accused Jesus of being a bastard, didn't they? Or the equivalent there, too. They said, "Hey, you were born of fornication." You know, that's true. Jesus is descended from the Pharaoh's line, which came from a case of fornication between Judah and his daughter-in-law, Tamar. Well, now, the guy that says, "We be not born of fornication," identifies then for us who these people are. Because the first two sons of Judah are dead. D-E-D, dead. The only one that survived here was Shelah, the mulatto son. So now what we have in Palestine are the descendants of Shelah, who are real, honest-to-God, bona fide Jews. They're not born of fornication, they're legitimate. But they're also mulattoes, aren't they? And Jesus, who was born from Judah and a white Hebrew princess, is not. And that's why they hated him. Blonde, blue-eyed Aryan. All right, now, as old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Well, hang on, boys and girls. I'll give you the mid-course reminder here, and we'll be back with more of the story on the genealogy of the Jews when we come back. Meanwhile, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417 273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. When you go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. All right, we're talking about the genealogy of the Jews and this peculiar statement that we see in Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9, which says, there are some people out here calling themselves Jews who are not, but do lie. Now, the other side of the coin, there's a bunch of people out here called Arabs. And these Arabs, when you ask them, who are they descended from, they just look you right in the eyeball and tell you, Abraham. They know their genealogy comes from Abraham through their father Ishmael. And the story there is fairly simple. His wife, this is Abraham's wife Sarah, was barren. She had a handmaid named Hagar. And in case you think that these Arabs now are bastards, they're not. Not at all. You see, Sarah said to Abraham, take my handmaid as your concubine. Now, a concubine is a wife. A concubine is not a mistress. A concubine is a wife with a peculiar disability. A concubine is a wife whose children do not inherit. And when Abraham sent Hagar away with Ishmael, he sent her away with gifts, not the inheritance. He took care of her. He gave her $5 million and sent her down the road. Now, the descendants from the Arabs to this day are not illegitimate, they're not bastards, and they're not mongrels. How do you like that? And they know where they came from. That's why the Arab ambassador was able to challenge the fellow who claimed to be a Jew in the United Nations in 1948 and said, hey, you bring up your pedigree. We know where we came from. Where'd you come from, sucker? And he shut up. Well, today we can know where he came from. And I'm going to show you, there's a little book here called Who is Esau Edom by Charles Wiseman. You can probably get a copy of it. It's copyrighted in December of 1991. I'll tell you where I think I would go to get this book directly from bravenewbookstore.com. Why don't you write that down, bravenewbookstore.com. I'll bet you can get it there. Telephone number is 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512-480-2503. You might be able to get it from the publisher. It's 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. Printed in the USA. That address again is 11751. That's 11751 West River Hills Drive, number 107D, Burnsville, Minnesota, 55337. Now, over here in chapter 1, he has a section here called The Origin of the Jews. There are other books out there in the world that cover this topic, but this guy is good, and he's got all the answers here, and we can cover that in pretty short order. So listen up and let me show you. The Jews of today fall within two main types. They're called the Sephardic Jew and the Ashkenazi Jew. The Sephardans are known as Spanish Jews, and they constitute about 5% of the Jews in the world. Now, the Ashkenazim are the East European Jews, which are found in Poland, Russia, Germany, and Western Asia. This group of Jews make up about 90% of the Jews in the world. Now, many references and historical sources have unequivocally identified that the bulk of the Ashkenazi Jews were derived from a people known as Khazars. The original Jewish Encyclopedia of 1905 revealed that the main stock of Jews came from this Asiatic people known as Khazars, spelled K-H-A-Z-A-R-S, and sometimes it's spelled C-H-A-Z-A-R-S. Now, the C-H-A-Z-A-R-S are a people of Turkish origin whose life and history are interwoven with the very beginnings of the history of the Jews of Russia. Historical evidence points to the region of the Urals as the home of the C-H-A-Z-A-R-S. The Khazars were a nomadic people who had no traces of Hebraic culture. They had been following a pagan and sex-oriented religion until they had officially embraced Judaism in 740 AD. While rejecting Christianity and Mohammedism, the Jewish author and historian Arthur Koestler also concludes that the majority of East European Jews, and hence of world Jewry, is of Khazar, K-H-A-Z-A-R, and not of Semitic origin. And in the beginning of his book, this is Arthur Koestler, a large majority of surviving Jews in the world is of Eastern European and thus perhaps mainly of Khazar origin. If so, this would mean that their ancestors came not from the Jordan, but from the Volga. Not from Canaan, but from the Caucasus. And that genetically they are more closely related to the Hun, the Uyghur, and the Magyar tribes than to the seed of Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. Koestler then devotes the remainder of his 255-page book to prove this premise. For instance, a record of a letter by a Khazar king shows that he traced his people to Noah's son, Japheth, not Shem. Abraham is descended from Shem. These Khazars are descended from Japheth. Japheth's grandson, Tugarma, and the ancestor of all of the Turkish tribes. The Khazar government was destroyed by the Slavs of Russia in 1016 AD, and around 1200 AD, the land was invaded by the hordes of Genghis Khan. These two events caused large numbers of the Khazars to migrate to Poland and Western Russia, forming the cradle of Western Jewry today. There is an abundance of ancient place names in the Ukraine and Poland which derive from the word Khazar, or Z-H-I-D, which is Jew. As the Khazars left their homeland of Khazaria and migrated north and west, they lost their name and became known as Jews. Their Yiddish language and alphabet is not that of the Israelites, which comes from the Phoenician and Greek style, but an amalgamation of Aramaic, medieval German, Slavic, and Russian dialects. The best historical evidence, therefore, shows that the Jews are not descended directly from the Israelites of the Bible. But they derive much of their ancestry from the Khazars and other people of Turkish Asiatic blood. The Khazars are also of Edomite stock, and both stocks make up the present-day Jews, as the historian H.G. Wells states. The Edomites were made Jews in a Turkish people. Khazars were mainly Jews in South Russia. The main part of Jewry never was in Judea and had never come out of Judea. And according to the Jewish Encyclopedia, the original stock of the Khazars came from the land of Edom. Now, the Seir Mountains are none other than the original land of Esau, Edom. The Bible tells us, "Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir." Esau is Edom, Genesis 36, verse 8. And Seir, S-E-I-R, was a mountain range south of the Dead Sea and was also known as the land of Edom, in Genesis 36, verse 21. The Seir Mountains were the home of the Edomites for nearly 1,000 years. And thus it should be no surprise that migrants from that land would recall the name of their original homeland. If the Khazars did originally dwell near the Seir Mountains, then the Khazars and thus world Jewry are racially of Edomite stock. But how and when did Edomites get to Khazaria? Well, the evidence shows that in the 6th century B.C., some of the Edomites fled their homeland of Seir and migrated north. After the fall of Jerusalem in 586 B.C. to the Babylonians, the Edomites began to press northward, as we see in Ezekiel 36, verse 5. The extent and the ultimate destination of this northward trek is not found in history, but it is likely that it brought some Edomites to the region of Khazaria, and the Edomites were also cast out of Palestine and dispersed in different directions in 70 AD when the Romans sacked Jerusalem, and thousands of these people are known to have migrated northward to Asia Minor and around the Black Sea region. So when dealing with a people of mixed racial heritage, it becomes a real quandary to ascertain their origin. The Jews of today are such a people. In fact, the Jews themselves assert that they're mongrels because of the original mixed ancestry of the Jews and their subsequent history of intermixture with every people among whom they have lived and continue to live. Now, that word mongrel is pretty important. Let me show you why. When we look in Genesis 38, and we see this word bastard, which occurs in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, it's only mentioned twice now in the Old Testament. You'll see it in Zechariah 9, 6, and Deuteronomy 23, verse 2. A bastard, by definition, is a mixed race or mongrel. And there's a statute here in Deuteronomy 23:2 that says, "No bastard shall enter the congregation to the 10th generation." Now, a mongrel isn't an illegitimate. An illegitimate that we call a bastard today is like the word gay being a substitute for the word sodomite. And the word bastard in English has a dual meaning. It can mean an illegitimate or it can mean a mongrel, but in Hebrew it only means mongrel. Now, an illegitimate cannot inherit. Now, also, there's a word in the New Testament, Hebrews 12, verse 8, which means illegitimate or bastard, where the Apostle Paul, writing to the Hebrews, said, "You are bastards and not sons." But in the word here in Deuteronomy 23, verse 2, we're looking at the word mongrel. and a mongrel now can inherit. And you'll notice that these mongrels said to Jesus, he said, they said, we be not born of fornication. And yet in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, these are people that call themselves Jews and are not, but do lie. So what we have here is an amalgamation in Israel today of the descendants of Shelah, who are legitimate Jews. They actually are descended from Judah. But most of the people who call themselves Jews today, and around the world there's about 15 to 20 million of them, are the descendants of Esau. They're the Edomites. So a question arises, what is this controversy between the Jews and Christians? You know, the Jews and their alleged brothers, the other 11 tribes. What happened? Well, the Israelites went off into whoredom, and they took on the religions and the cultures of the heathen nations around them, which they were told not to do. I'm a descendant of that branch of the Zara line from Scotland. Now, the Gordons are very prominent in Scotland, and we have a proud history that goes all the way back to the ancient tribes that first settled there when we left Egypt long before Moses did. And then we're called Druids, the people who go into battle naked and painted, worshiping the sun and the moon and the stars. Total pagans. That's my family line. Now, I'm descended from Judah, but I'm also an Israelite. Notice here that these people are called Jews who do lie. And the people who are descended from Judah don't have a clue as to who they are. Now, the people of Europe do, and Queen Elizabeth is a descendant of Judah through what we call the Pharaoh's line. Remember, Tamar had two boys, one named Pharaoh's and one named Zerah. Well, the Messiah, Jesus, was descended from Pharaoh's, and Queen Elizabeth is descended from Pharaoh's, and George Gordon is descended from Zerah, as are people like, remember that famous king from Scotland, David Bruce, who was the no good in Braveheart? Well, that's my great-great-great-granddaddy, David Bruce. Now write this down, boys and girls, because you might want to trace out your genealogy someday. It's called the British Israel Society. And their address is number 1, Buckingham Gate, London. Now, it's the last address I had for them. Number 1, Buckingham Gate, London. That's the British Israel Society. Now, those people, for the last, well, they started in 800, so the last 1,200 years, have been keeping track of all of the genealogies of the royal families of Europe. Now, if you can trace your family back to any of these royal families, could be in Holland, Germany, Scotland, Ireland, you know, any of them, you can trace your genealogy all the way back to Adam and Eve. And you can get Queen Elizabeth's genealogy. They print it. Cost you a few bucks for the chart. Her genealogy goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. Now, here's the kicker. Queen Elizabeth, a descendant of the Pharaoh's line, sits on the throne that Jesus, the Messiah, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, is coming back to earth to take over. When he comes back, he will be taking up Queen Elizabeth's throne. And that's because there was a contract made with King David. And in the contract, there will always be an Israelite. There will always be a descendant of David. There will always be a Jew sitting on the throne, ruling over some of, if not all of, the tribes of Israel. Queen Elizabeth fits that bill. Now, here's another book for you, in case you're wondering. It's called Symbols of Our Celto-Saxon Heritage by W. H. Bennett. It's a little pricey because it went out of print back in 1932, but I had a Canadian here in class the other day, and he said this book is now being reprinted in Canada. Reprinted in Canada. So you should be able to get a new copy of it. Take a look at W. H. Bennett. It was last printed in 1976. And I'll take that back. Second printing was in 1985. First printing was in 1932. Again, go to bravenewbookstore.com. bravenewbookstore.com. Telephone numbers 512-480-2503. And that phone again, 512-480-2503, Brave New Bookstore, Austin, Texas, or online, it's bravenewbookstore.com. I'll bet you that they can get that copy for you. Now, to recapitulate, the genealogy of the Jews, the people who call themselves Jews today, there is a small minority that are, in fact, descended from Shelah. They live in Palestine. They're called Israelis, not Israelites. But the bulk of the people who live there, about 95% of them, are descended from Esau, Jacob's brother, the one he stole the birthright from. Well, that's what all the controversy is over. Those people haven't forgotten the theft of the birthright, and they're out to get it back. And they're going to. They're going to succeed. They're going to destroy the earth in the process, and they're going to succeed for about 1 hour, a short period of time. And the rest of us are going to pay the piper. And it's called the Great Tribulation. So suck it up, boys and girls, and get ready, because here it comes. Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 identify these people who called themselves Jews and are not. They're not descended from Judah, they're descended from Esau. Judah and Tamar had two boys. Those two boys are named Phares and Zerah. The Zerah line is in Germany and Scotland and Ulster. And the Phares line are in England. And we've been fighting with the English over that red thread. Because, you see, those of us that came from Zerah believe that we should have the throne, and those that came from Phares believe that they should own the throne. And that's why you see so much in the way of fighting and violence and controversy between the Scots, the Irish, and the English. The English got it, and we think we should have had it. Well, there you have it, boys and girls, coupled with John 8, verse 41, that says, "We be not born of fornication." There's the story of the genealogy of the Jews. Now, I've just had an hour to bring that to your attention. There's a lot more to it, and if you want to learn more, remember, Symbols of Our Celto-Saxon Heritage and Who is Esau Edom by Charles A. Wiseman. You can get both books from bravenewbookstore.com. Hey, I'm running out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.